The greatest puzzle in cosmology just got even more puzzling. Based on multiple observations of stars and galaxies, the universe seems to be flying apart faster than our best models of the cosmos predict it should. Evidence of this conundrum has been accumulating for years, causing some researchers to call it a looming crisis in cosmology. Things even get worse when a massive dataset obtained by Hubble Space Telescope showed 1,000,000-to-1 odds that the discrepancy is a statistical fluke. In other words, there's a problem with the standard model and we might need new physics to explain it. Join us as we dig deep into how Hubble just confirmed our physics is broken. The universe seems to throw a lot of surprises at us, and that's a good thing, because it helps us learn. One of the biggest conundrums in modern astronomy is known as the Hubble tension, after astronomer Edwin Hubble. In 1929, he observed that the farther a galaxy is from us, the faster it recedes, an observation that helped pave the way toward our current notion of the universe starting with the Big Bang and expanding ever since. Researchers have tried to measure the universe's current rate of expansion in two primary ways, by measuring distances to nearby stars and by mapping a faint glow dating back to the infant universe. These dual approaches provide a way to test our understanding of the universe across more than 13 billion years of cosmic history. The research has also uncovered some key cosmic ingredients, such as dark energy, the mysterious force thought to be driving the universe's accelerating expansion. But these two methods disagree on the universe's current expansion rate by about 8%. That difference might not sound like much, but if this discrepancy is real, it means the universe is now expanding faster than even dark energy can explain, implying some breakdown in our accounting of the cosmos. The researchers' findings, described in several studies submitted to the Astrophysical Journal, use specific types of stars and stellar explosions to measure the distance between us and nearby galaxies. The dataset includes observations of 42 different stellar explosions, more than double the next biggest analysis of its kind. According to the team's work, the tension between their new analysis and results from measurements of the early cosmos has reached 5 sigma, the statistical threshold used in particle physics to confirm the existence of new particles. Other astronomers still see room for possible errors in the data, which means it's still possible the Hubble tension is just an artifact. However, as team member Dan Skolnick, an astronomer at Duke University, said, "We do not know how this large of an error is hiding at this point. And if it is, it's just something no one has suggested. We've checked every idea that's been presented to us, and nothing's doing the trick." The Hubble tension comes from attempts to measure or predict the universe's current rate of expansion, which is called the Hubble constant. Using it, astronomers can estimate the age of the universe since the Big Bang. One way of getting the Hubble constant relies on the cosmic microwave background, a faint glow that formed when the universe was just 380,000 years old. Telescopes such as the European Space Agency's Planck Observatory have measured the cosmic microwave background, providing a detailed snapshot of how matter and energy were distributed in the early universe, as well as the physics that governed them. Using a model that predicts many of the universe's properties with spectacular success, known as the Lambda Cold Dark Matter Model, cosmologists can mathematically forward the infant universe as seen in the cosmic microwave background and predict what today's Hubble constant should be. This method predicts that the universe should be expanding at a rate of about 67.36 kilometers per second per megaparsec. For those who don't know, a megaparsec equals 3.26 million light years. By contrast, other teams measure the Hubble constant by looking at the local universe, the more modern stars and galaxies that are relatively close to us. This version of the calculation requires two kinds of data: how quickly a galaxy is receding from us, and how far away that galaxy is. That in turn requires astronomers to develop what's known as a cosmic distance ladder. The new study's cosmic distance ladder, assembled by Adam Ries, an astronomer at Johns Hopkins University who lead research group SHOES, starts with measurements of the distances between us and certain kinds of stars called Cepheid variables. Cepheids are valuable because in essence they act as strobe lights of known wattage. They brighten and dim regularly, and the brighter the Cepheids, the more slowly they pulsate. Using this principle, astronomers can estimate the intrinsic brightnesses of even more distant Cepheids based on their pulsation rates and ultimately calculate the star's distances from us. To extend the ladder even farther, astronomers have added rungs based on stellar explosions called Type 1, a supernovae. By studying galaxies that host both Cepheids and Type Onea supernovae, astronomers can work out the relationship between the supernova's brightnesses and their distances. And because Type Onea supernovae are much brighter than Cepheids, they can be seen at much greater distances, letting astronomers extend their measurements to galaxies deeper in the cosmos. The trouble is, accurately measuring all of these stars and supernovae is devilishly complicated. Technically speaking, not all Cepheids and Type 1 supernovae look exactly the same. Some may have different compositions, different colors, or different types of host galaxies. Astronomers have spent many years figuring out how to account for all this variability, but it's extremely difficult to know with certainty that some hidden source of error isn't pushing its thumb on the scales. To address these concerns, a research team called the Pantheon Plus Collaboration exhaustively analyzed 1701 observations of Type 1a supernovae collected since 1981. The analysis included efforts to quantify all known uncertainties and sources of bias. According to Duke University's Skolnick, who co-leads Pantheon Plus with Harvard, Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics researcher Dylan Brout, we care about, like, what the weather and seeing of a telescope was like in November 1991. That is tough. The team's findings fed into the new analysis by Ries and his Shoes colleagues. After performing a similarly exhaustive cross-check of factors that could affect observations of Cepheids, the team generated its sharpest estimate, yet for the Hubble constant, 73.4 kilometers per second, per megaparsec, plus or minus 1.4. That's about 8% higher than the value inferred from the Planck Observatory's measurements of the cosmic microwave background. The team also went to great lengths to test outside scientists' ideas for why its Hubble constant estimate is higher than Planck's. In all, the researchers ran 67 variants of their analysis, many of which made the tension worse. "We've listened, I think, carefully to a lot of concerns and issues," Ria says. "This isn't just a Shazam. We've done a lot of deep dives down rabbit holes." However, in recent years, the University of Chicago's Wendy Friedman has been working on an estimate that doesn't rely on pulsing stars. Instead, she uses a specific group of red giant stars, which also act like light bulbs of known wattage. Building off of these alternate standard candles, or objects with known intrinsic brightnesses, Friedman's independent estimate of the Hubble constant is 69.8 kilometers per second, per megaparsec, in the middle of the other two measurements. Despite the team's careful work, Friedman says that undiscovered errors could still be affecting the analysis, perhaps creating an illusory tension. She adds that some sources of uncertainty are also unavoidable. For one, there are only three galaxies close enough to the Milky Way whose distances we can measure directly, and the base of the cosmic distance ladder rests on this trio. "Three's a small number, but that's what nature has given us," Friedman says. The Pantheon Plus and Shoes teams have taken a long look at Friedman and others' results, and some of their various analyses examine what happens if Friedman's preferred stars are added to the cosmic distance ladder, along with Cepheids and Type 1e supernovae. According to their work, including these extra stars slightly lowers the estimate for the Hubble constant, but it does not eliminate the tension. And if the Hubble tension really does reflect our physical reality, then explaining it will probably require adding another item to our list of the universe's fundamental ingredients. The standard model of cosmology incorporates all the familiar forms of matter and radiation and their interactions. It also includes the invisible substances known as dark energy and dark matter, which together make up some 96% of the cosmos. Because so little is known about these dark ingredients, they are perhaps the obvious place to begin tampering with the standard model. As Avi Laib, a cosmologist at Harvard University and one of dozens of researchers who have proposed solutions to the Hubble tension, said, "That's what you have at your disposal to change the expansion rate of the universe. The standard model assumes that dark matter consists of slow-moving particles that don't interact with light. But what if we also assume that dark matter is not made of just a single substance? Since many different kinds of visible particles exist, quarks, electrons, and so on, there might be multiple dark particles as well." In a paper published in Physical Review D, Loeb and two collaborators considered a form of dark matter that decays into a lighter particle and a massless particle known as a dark photon. As more and more dark matter decayed over time, they reasoned its gravitational pull would have lessened, and thus the expansion of the universe would have sped up, relieving the Hubble tension. But making small changes like this to the standard cosmological model can have unwanted knock-on effects. "It's very easy to come up with all kinds of slight modifications," said Mark Kamionkowski, a theoretical physicist at Johns Hopkins University. "But it's hard to do so," he said, "without ruining the model's perfect fit with a wealth of other astronomical observations." By varying the decay rate and the amount of dark matter that is lost in each decay, Loeb and colleagues selected a model of decaying dark matter that they say still agrees with other astronomical observations. If you add this ingredient to the standard model of cosmology, everything holds together, Loeb said. Yet he remains dissatisfied with the decaying dark matter idea, in part because it introduces two new uncertain quantities into the equations. "In this case, you add two free parameters in order to resolve one discrepancy, and I'm uneasy about that," he said, comparing decaying dark matter to the epicycles in Ptolemy's Earth-centric model of the universe. "I would rather have two discrepancies explained by one parameter." Ever since the surprise discovery in 1998 that the expansion of the universe is accelerating, cosmologists have included a repulsive dark energy in their model of cosmic evolution, but its nature remains a mystery. The simplest possibility is that dark energy is the cosmological constant, the energy of space itself, with a constant density everywhere. But what if the amount of dark energy in the universe isn't constant? An extra dose of dark energy in the early universe, dubbed early dark energy, could reconcile the conflicting values of the Hubble constant. The outward pressure of this early dark energy would have sped up the universe's expansion. The tricky part is that early dark energy can't really stick around. It has to go away quickly, said Lisa Randall, a particle physicist and cosmologist at Harvard. Randall and her collaborators devised what they call rock and roll solutions to the Hubble tension in a paper submitted to the Journal of High Energy Physics. Each of these additions to the standard model takes a different mathematical form. In sum, the density of dark energy oscillates, or rocks, while in others it rolls down from a high value to zero. But in all cases, the early dark energy must disappear after a few hundred thousand years, during an epoch known as recombination. "The history of the universe since recombination is pretty consistent with the standard model," said Kamionkowski, who co-authored a paper on early dark energy published in Physical Review Letters last June. "So any monkey business that we do in the early universe has to decay away." Alongside early dark energy, theorists have put forward other exotic forms of dark energy, such as quintessence and phantom dark energy, that also change as the universe ages. While these extensions to the standard model relieve the Hubble tension, they are regarded by many cosmologists as fine-tuned, opportune mathematical additions that have no clear justification. But Kamionkowski says that the novel forms of dark energy appear less contrived when considered alongside other periods of expansion in the universe's history. For example, most cosmologists think space exponentially expanded at the start of the Big Bang during a period known as inflation, which was driven by a different kind of dark energy than the one that exists today. Such dark energy-dominated periods are thought to occur occasionally throughout the history of the universe, Kamienkowski said. The standard model of cosmology, all known forms of matter and radiation, plus dark matter and dark energy, are fed into Albert Einstein's theory of gravity. And Einstein's theory of gravity and Einstein's equations indicate how space expands as a result. This means that, besides changing or adding cosmic ingredients to the model, there's another way physicists can reconcile it with the observed cosmic expansion rate. You can imagine that Einstein's equations are not correct, Loeb said. William Barker, a doctoral student at the University of Cambridge, was searching for a theory of modified gravity last summer when he stumbled across a way to resolve the Hubble tension. Barker found a modified gravity model that was capable of behaving as if there were extra radiation in the early universe, he said. The radiation pressure would have increased the cosmic expansion rate. But in a preprint submitted to Physical Review D in March, Barker and three co-authors acknowledge that much more analysis is needed to see if the model can describe not only how the universe expands, but also how structures like galaxies and clusters evolve. With contemporary telescopes offering a glut of impressively precise data on such structures, devising a theory that matches all the observations is no mean feat. Many of the modified gravity theories are not complete theories, and when you're trying to do a detailed calculation with sophisticated data sets, it's hard to do that in a robust way, Kamienkowski said. We all know they are ad hoc, Randall said of the proposals so far. The amazing thing is that even with these ad hoc additions, it's still very hard to accommodate the discrepancy. Even with the extra freedom, most of the non-standard models only reduce the Hubble tension rather than eliminating it. They predict a faster cosmic expansion rate than the standard model, but it's still not quite fast enough to match observations of supernovas and other astronomical objects. In the coming years, the Euclid Telescope and others will meticulously map how gravity and dark energy have shaped cosmic evolution. Meanwhile, gravitational waves emitted from colliding neutron stars offer a new way to measure the Hubble constant. The new data will rule out some of these novel solutions to the Hubble tension, but new cracks in the standard model may appear. For now, many cosmologists are loath to complicate the model when it otherwise works so well. There is a little bit of a sense of wait and see, unless someone has a really good idea, said Randall. And even if the Hubble tension turns out to be nothing more than an accumulation of errors, this search for new physics may not be in vain. As Randall said, interesting results occasionally come from things that go away eventually. It forces you to think, what do we know? And how much can we change things? While the greatest puzzle in cosmology just got even more puzzling, the NASA Parker Solar Probe has become the fastest human-made object ever recorded. Again, the probe launched in August 2018 is on a 7-year mission to understand the Sun's corona, or the outermost layer of the Sun's atmosphere. Understanding how heat moves through the corona, how plasma and magnetic fields change on the Sun's surface, and how that powers phenomena such as solar wind will help scientists better predict space weather. On September 27, the probe reached a blistering 394,736 miles per hour, or 635,266 kilometers per hour, as it swooped close to the Sun's surface, thanks to a little gravity assistance from a close flyby of Venus on August 21. With this blistering approach to the Sun, the probe smashed its own previous speed record of 364,660 miles per hour, or 586 miles per hour, or 586,863 kilometers per hour, set in November 2021. At the same time, the probe set a new distance record, swooping within just 4.51 million miles, or 7.26 million km, of the solar surface, closer than any spacecraft has ever orbited before. The Venus flybys are a crucial element of the probe's attempt to study the Sun's scorching surface. As the probe zooms by Venus, the planet absorbs some of Parker's orbital energy, allowing it to get closer to the Sun. The probe has one more flyby planned. Its closest approach to the Sun in late 2024 is predicted to be just 3.83 million miles, or 6.16 million miles, or 6.16 million km from the surface. The probe will likely reach even greater speeds on its final trip around the Sun, firmly solidifying its reputation as the fastest human-made object ever. While efforts to conquer deep space continue to reap many remarkable achievements, the race to the Moon remains fierce. After the Chandrayaan, three spacecraft made a soft landing on the Moon in August. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi was able to bask in the reflected glory of the nation's space agency, Indian Space Research Organization, or ISRO for short. Modi also previously set into motion the Gaganyaan program to launch the country's first astronauts from its own soil. With that milestone now possibly set to occur in 2025, Modi has set his sights higher and farther. After a high-level meeting this week to assess progress on the Gaganyaan mission, Modi's office released a statement outlining the country's ambitions in space over the next two decades. As part of the statement, Modi said Indian scientists would work toward a Venus orbiter mission and a Mars lander. These are all fairly standard spaceflight goals, and India is following a tried and true path in the 21st century laid out by China. That country demonstrated human spaceflight for the first time in 2003, began construction on its Tiangong space station in 2021, and also landed its Tianwen-1 spacecraft on Mars that year. China now is working on a crewed lunar program with the approximate goal of landing its astronauts on the Moon around 2030. By these measures, India is following a similar trajectory, albeit 15 to 20 years after its Asian rival. While most of India's aims are realistic, a big question is whether India will achieve its aim of sending an Indian to the Moon by 2040. And if so, how? The Prime Minister's statement is fairly vague on how India will achieve its lunar aims. To realize this vision, the Department of Space will develop a roadmap for Moon exploration. This will encompass a series of Chandrayaan missions, the development of a next-generation launch vehicle, construction of a new launch pad, setting up human-centric laboratories and associated technologies. Basically, this is saying to be determined. The statement mentions a next-generation launch vehicle. However, this rocket will be able to lift about the same mass to orbit as the Falcon 9 rocket. Based on recent updates, the new rocket is intended to have a lift capacity of about 20 metric tons to low Earth orbit. This is not nearly powerful enough for lunar crewed missions. Moreover, this new rocket is unlikely to fly before 2030 and is still in the basic phase of design. Reportedly, ISRO has not even decided whether its propulsion system will use gyrosine or methane as propellant. So this rocket will not be the vehicle that takes Indians to the Moon. Such a rocket will require a longer process, perhaps taking a decade or so, to design, develop, test, and ultimately fly. Indian officials have said nothing about such a super heavy lift vehicle. This leaves two possibilities for Modi's statement on the country's lunar ambitions. First of all, it could be a platitude that expresses the country's eventual goal of putting Indians on the Moon with its own spacecraft and rockets. The year 2040 is far enough into the future that it sounds like a nice goal, but also requires that nothing immediately be done about it. This is sort of like NASA's goal to send humans to Mars by 2040. It sounds nice, but the agency is not undertaking the kinds of investments needed now to make it a reality. The other possibility is that India embraces NASA's Artemis Accords further. Earlier this year, India became the 27th country to sign these accords, a non-binding set of principles among like-minded nations guiding a vision for peaceful and transparent exploration of space. However, the specifics about what this cooperation between NASA and India will entail were very generic. Some Artemis Accord partners, such as Canada, have already locked in formal partnerships. For example, Canadian astronaut Jeremy Hansen will fly on board the Artemis II mission in 2025, and one or more European astronauts are likely to fly in Moon. Landing mission astronauts are likely to fly in Moon landing mission later this decade. India could easily find a way for one or more of its astronauts to reach the Moon as part of the Artemis program in the 2030s. And indeed, this would be a real coup for NASA and the United States, as India is a rising space power. Alternatively, India could simply buy a private landing on Starship, which SpaceX is likely to begin offering after NASA's initial Artemis missions to the lunar surface. However, this seems less likely, as it would not be a natively developed project. That's all the information that we have for you today. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up if you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe if you haven't already, and hit the bell so you never miss out on future episodes. And be sure to also tell us what you think about today's content. Everyone's support motivates us to continue delivering quality content and to always improve. As always, thanks for watching, and we will see you next time.